Please be seated.
Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahavyunyam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Good. Welcome back. We're continuing our study of Chapter 10. We just began Chapter 10 in our last class. Chapter 10 is Vibhuti Yoga, and it's this chapter that so poetically conveys the glories of Bhagavan. Very poetic, very beautiful section that particular section comes just a little bit later, after Arjuna's question. The opening part of the chapter is a really quite profound and understanding of Bhagavan as the source of all. And in what sense is God the source of all? We'll see that. We'll begin with some chanting, and then we'll pick up the thread where we left off. Repeat after me, please.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Bhuya Heva Mahabaho, Bhuya Heva Mahabaho, Shrinu Me Paramam Vachaha, Shrinu Me Yatte Ham Priyamanaya, Yatte Ham Priyam Vakshyami Hita Kamyaya, Vakshyami Hita Kamyaya, Name Vidu Suraganaha, Name Vidu Prabhavam namaharshayaha, Prabhavam namaharshayaha, Aham adirhi devanam, Aham adirhi devanam, Maharshi nam cha sarvashaha, Maharshi nam cha sarvashaha, Yo mam ajamanadim cha, Yo mam ajamanadim cha, Veti loka maheshwaram, Veti Asammudha samartyeshu, Asammudha samartyeshu, Sarva papai pramuchyate, Sarva papai pramuchyate, Buddhir jnanam asammohaha, Buddhir jnanam asammohaha, Kshama satyam damashamaha, Sukham dukham bhavo bhavo, Sukham dukham bhavo bhavo, Bhayam cha bhayam eva cha, Bhayam cha bhayam eva cha, Ahimsa samatha tushtis, Ahimsa samatha tushtis, Tapo danam yasho yashaha, Tapo danam Bhavanti bhava bhutanam, Bhavanti bhava bhutanam, Mattaheva pratagvidhaha, Mattaheva pratagvidhaha, Maharshaya saptapurve, Maharshaya saptapurve, Chatwaro manavastata, Chatwaro Madbhava manasa jata, Madbhava Yesham loka imah prajaha, Yesham loka imah prajaha, Etam vibhutim yogam cha,
Etam vibhutim
yogam cha, Mamayo veti tatvataha, Mamayo veti tatvataha, So vikalpena yogena.
So vikalpena yogena.
Yujyate natra samshayah.
Yujyate natra
samshayah. Aham sarvasya prabhavo.
Aham sarvasya prabhavo.
Matta sarvam pravartate. Yati matva bhajante mam.
Yati matva bhajante mam.
Buddha bhava samanvitah.
Buddha bhava samanvitah.
Matchitta madgata prana.
Matchitta madgata.
Bodhayantah parasparam.
Bodhayantah.
Katayantascha mam nityam.
Katayantascha mam nityam.
Tushyanti cha vramanti cha.
Tushyanti cha vramanti cha.
Tesham satata yuktanam.
Tesham
satata yuktanam. Bhajatam priti purvakam.
Bhajatam
priti purvakam. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. Yena mam upayanti te.
Yena mam upayanti te.
Let's see the sasa.
Tesham evanukam partham.
Tesham evanukam
partham. Aham ajnana jamtamaha. Nashayam yatma bhavasto.
Nashayam yatma bhav.
Jnana dipena bhasvata.
Jnana dipena bhasvata.
Very good. And I think Arjuna's question, yes. All right. One of the most important ways in which we understand Bhagavan is as the source of all. What does that mean? We've actually had some fairly technical discussions about that when we studied chapter 7 and chapter 9. We talked about Bhagavan being the nimitta upadana karanas, as being the material cause and a knowledge cause for the universe. Material cause, upadana karana, means what? These are abstract philosophical terms. So what we're going to see this morning is a series of verses that will help us better understand the statement that everything comes from Bhagavan. And that was introduced by the very last part we saw in the previous class. Previous class we saw chapter verse 5. We ended with the second half of verse 5. Ha! Bhavanti bhava bhutanam mattaha eva pratak vidhaha. This statement opens up the discussion. And here Sri Krishna says that bhavaha bhutanam, the bhavaha, the existences, it's plural, bhavaha, and that, if you look at the end of the line, pratak vidhaha, in all various ways. So bhavaha pratak vidhaha, all of the various existences, bhutanam, of all that exists, all of that, bhavanti, all of that exists or becomes or comes into existence, bhavanti, coming into existence. And how does it come into existence? Mattaha eva. Mattaha, the visarga is gone because of the sandhi. Mattaha eva. Mattaha means from me. Mattaha eva. From me eva alone. Everything comes from me alone, Sri Krishna speaks. Now, these are statements we've heard again and again. If they're abstract and philosophical, it's not useful. If it's fuzzy and indistinct, it's also not useful. After all, these teachings are meant to foster our life of devotion. The middle six chapters in general, and especially chapter 10, are really meant to foster a prayer life, a devotional life. Well, does abstract philosophy do much for your bhakti? Not much. Does vague expressions of the nature of God do much for your prayer life? No. So, this needs to be unfolded. Fortunately, Sri Krishna does exactly that in the coming verses. So we'll move ahead and you'll see how this is explained. In what way does everything come from God? What does that mean?
Maharshaya Sapta Purve, Maharshaya Sapta Purve, Chatwaro Manavastata, Chatwaro Manavastata, Madhava Manasa Jata. Yesham loka imah prajaha.
Continuing from the prior verse where he says, everything comes from me, all that exists, including Maharshayaha, including the great rishis. Saptaha purve. There were purve early on, long ago, there were Saptarishi, the seven rishis, Kashyapa, Atri, Vishwamitra, etc., etc. A total of seven great sages. Not only these seven sages existed long ago, but also Chatvaraha, Manavas, Tata, and also Manavaha, Manus, plural. Manu, you know, is the Hindu Adam, the first human being, the first creature, the one from whom we're all evolved. And in the Puranas, they talk of 14 Manus, 14 generations of Manus, as it were. Here, Chatvara means four, but I suppose the implication is 14, since that's the number that comes in our scriptures. So, this verse says that all of these, the 14 Manus, second line, Yesham, from whom Lokaha Imaha Prajaha, from whom Imaha Prajaha, all of these people, Imaha, all of these Praja, here progeny, all of these progeny, Loke, in this world, all have come from Manu, from the primordial man, so to speak, or in this case, the 14 primordial men. We are all descendants in that way. So here, Sri Krishna is accounting for all of us as descendants of Manu, and even including the great rishis, so the rishis also are descendants of Manu. All of this, now here's the point, all of this, he says, previous verse, he used the expression mattaha, from me. Now it gets explained. Madbhavaha jataha manasaha. All of these are madbhavaha jataha. All of these are jataha, born, literally. All of these are born. It's plural in number. All of these are born. How? Madbhavaha, from my existence, madbhavaha jataha. All of these are born from my existence, and the key word here, manasaha, from my mind, mentally. All these are born, I'll paraphrase, all these are born from my mind. I'm paraphrasing. Manasajata, born of the mind. This is Sri Krishna speaking as Ishvara, as the source of the universe. And he says, all of these are born of my mind. Now, that expression you've probably heard with reference to some Puranic story, perhaps Brahmaji projecting the universe from his mind. But we're not talking about a Puranic mythological story right now. We're talking about Bhagavan as such. So we have to abandon mythology, really, at this point. If you really want to understand who is Bhagavan, we have to be ready to abandon the mythology. Why abandon mythology? Do you really think Bhagavan is Lord Mahavishnu laying on that snake, on a snake bed on the bottom of the Milky Ocean, Goddess Lakshmi massaging his legs? This is the source of the universe? It's a wonderful mythological story, presentation of God. Or in our meditation, we talked about Lord Mahadeva, Lord Shiva, sitting on top of Mount Meru, deeply immersed in meditation. If you go up to the Himalayas, do you think you'll find him sitting there in some place? You get the point. These are mythological representations, and they're wonderful. This is not to put them down by any means, in any way whatsoever, but to recognize their limitations. They're meant... different things are meant for different people. Many of you have raised children. Remember the first books that your children had? See Jane Run. Right? So is that... When you crawl up in a chair for a nice afternoon of reading, is that the kind of book you take with you? Certainly not. That book is not meant for you. In the same way, and this perhaps is a fair metaphor, and that is these Puranic stories are meant for not just children, but those of us who are more childlike. And there's nothing wrong with being childlike. Childish is a problem. There's a difference between these two words. Childish means foolish and immature. Childlike means maintaining the good qualities of innocence and purity that children have. So if you are childlike, then those Puranic stories are perhaps helpful. If you're not particularly childlike, if you're more adult-like, then we set aside, we don't throw away, we set aside the mythological stories to understand Bhagavan as he is. Set aside, those children's books, you didn't throw them away. Well, you may have, but maybe you set them aside. If you're raising a family, you may have other children or you'll have nieces and nephews. You don't throw them away generally. You save them because they're still valuable. They're not valuable to you. They're not, and as your children grow up, they may no longer be valuable to your children. They will be valuable to others. In the same way, these Puranic stories, the mythological stories, we never consider throwing them away. We may choose to set them aside. We're setting them aside right now. When it says Manasajata, here's the point. This is not a story of Brahmaji projecting the universe from his mind. That's in the Purana. As Lord Mahavishnu is on the bottom of the Milky Ocean, from his navel emerges a lotus. And when that lotus unfolds its petals, lo and behold, sitting amongst the petals of that lotus is Brahmaji, who stirs from his sleep and projects the universe from his mind. That's not what we're studying here. So, what does it mean here in a non-mythological sense? Bhagavan projects the universe from his mind. Everything comes from me, he said in a prior verse. Now he explains, everything comes from my mind, Sri Krishna would say. In what sense? Many of you will remember when we studied chapter 7 and 9, remember the Swapna Drishtanta dream metaphor, the dream example. And this ended up being a wonderful and useful metaphor or example to help us understand who and what is Bhagavan. We use these drishtantas, metaphors, a lot. A picture is worth 1,000 words. A metaphor is worth 1,000 paragraphs. So, let's give a different version of this dream example. It's always fun to take examples and play with them, change them. suppose you all dream. You know what dreams are. Think of some incredibly vivid dreams that you've had. Many times the dreams are not very vivid. Once in a while, we can have a particularly vivid dream. Now, just for fun, imagine that this morning I dreamt waking up. I dreamt waking up this morning. I dreamt having a cup of coffee. I dreamt having a shower. I dreamt coming down here to teach to conduct a morning puja. I dreamt conducting the morning chanting. I dreamt conducting the morning meditation session. And right now, I'm dreaming, imagine, I'm dreaming that I'm conducting this class. From my standpoint, you are all my dream characters. This is the beginning of the metaphor. Now, looking upon this as my dream, I could say, where did all this come from? This beautiful ashram, the trees and sky outside, and all of you seated here, where did this all come from? Previous verse said, Matta Eva, it all came from me. And in what sense did it come from me? Manasa Jataha. It is all projected by the mind. Clearly, all of you are, in my metaphor, all of you are projected by me from my mind. My mental stuff gives you existence in my dream world. And when I wake up, you're gone. That's it. Now, every metaphor has limitations. This one has lots of limitations. First, we do not want to understand. We don't want to imply that this is God's dream. Human beings dream. Bhagavan, as such, does not dream. This is not, and you'll find different, some teachers will say, you know, this is sub Bhagavan ka lila or dream or play or something. It's fine in some contexts, but if we're really trying to understand what's going on, who is Bhagavan, and understand these verses, set that aside. Bhagavan doesn't dream, doesn't sleep. This says manasa jata, born of his mind. Bear in mind, sorry. Don't you hate it when that happens? All of this is born of his mind, but remember, it's not a human mind. Your mind and mine are the product of our brains, product of how many billions of neurons. I'm talking about a human being, a human brain, and a human mind. Bhagavan's mind is not confined to a brain, is not confined to a given mind. We can think of it as, if anything, universal mind. And to explain that in chapter 7 and 9, when we talked about Ishvara, God, as the nimitta karana, as a source of the intelligence because of which the universe exists, think about, this is a long topic and this is not the right time, but in a very simple way. The entire universe is intelligent, intelligently put together. This discussion we've had many times. Every atom, every particle, there is such a delicate balance of forces, balance of the forces of nature, which hold it together. I remember reading something where physicists have identified about 11 fundamental constants. You know, in physics, you have equations, and in those equations of physics, there are certain constants, like the speed of light is one of those constants. Well, they've identified about 11 constants, and what they did in computer models is they play with these constants and change them and see what would be the outcome. And what they discover is if you change any of the constants, the universe can't exist. That is, this universe exists because of the precise balance of so many forces of nature. If any of those forces of nature were a little different, we wouldn't be here to talk about it. This is one small glint of the incredible intelligence that pervades every particle in the universe. Now, the reason for calling this to your attention is to consider this. That intelligence present in every particle of the universe, this is Bhagavan's intelligence. This is God's mind. If God has a mind, that's it. Not like your mind and mine. It is like the intelligence that pervades every corner of this universe. So, with that in mind, here I go again. with that in mind, we return to this manasa jata, born of Bhagavan's mind, meaning born of that intelligence that pervades the universe. Now it starts to get real. This is not some abstract philosophy, nor is it some mythological representation. This is Sakshat Bhagavan. This is what it means to experience God as God truly is. Doesn't mean to have Mahavishnu standing before you with his four arms. It means to recognize Bhagavan's presence in and through the universe as that intelligence that pervades the universe, to understand that from that intelligence, from his mind pervading the universe, comes everything. Now, this is expanded on in the next several verses. Let's move ahead and we can talk about it some more then. Etam vibhutim yogam cha, etam. Mama yo veti tatvataha, mama yo so vikalpena yogena, yujyate natra samshayaha. Etam vibhutim yogam cha. Etam, these are my mama. Mama Vibhuti. Title of our chapter, by the way, Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti here means the glories of God. And here he says, Etam, this is Mama, my Vibhuti. This is my glory. Mama Yogam Cha. This is my, yoga here means power. Different words have different meanings in different situations. Here, yoga means power. So, Etam, this is Mama Vibhuti. This is my glory. Mama yoga, this is my power. What we're talking about, manasa jata, that everything that exists is born from Bhagavan's mind. This is Bhagavan's power. This is Bhagavan's glory. Minds are pretty powerful. From human minds has come pretty miraculous things. When you think of technology, when you think of advances in medicine, when you think of the works of music and art that have been created by human beings, all of that is born of human minds. And if you were to compare a human intelligence to the intelligence of the universe, here we talked about science before. How about if we come up with, you know, scientists will measure everything? Do you think we can measure? So we want to measure how intelligent. This is just for fun. Suppose we take the intelligence of the universe. Oh, here we go. Intelligence of the universe. And divide it by the intelligence of a human being. Equals, if the universe's intelligence were equal to your intelligence, this would be, ratio would be 1. Scientists will represent that as 10 to the 0 power. That's what they do. But suppose the universe is 100 times more than your intelligence. All right. 100 times. Is that right?
Two.
God. So much for science and math. All right. If the universe is 1,000 times, you get the idea? What ratio do you think we should use? Well, for starters, this number has a name. They call this Google, I think. 10 to the 100th power, they call it a Google. I think that's where the website gets its name. And then I think there's a Google and a Googleplex. And I don't recall if, I think a Googleplex is this. Something. I mean, ridiculous numbers. Ridiculous numbers. Why? Because we can't handle this. Infinite means what? Our minds are finite. How can we grasp the infinite with our finite minds? We can't. So in place of infinity, let us substitute an incredibly big number. That big number represents how much more powerful the universal mind is compared to your mind. Think of what your mind is capable of, a human mind. Think about the works of technology, of science, of art, how fabulous that is. Now multiply that by 10 to the 100th power. And you're going in the right direction. You're not even there. This is the power of Bhagavan's mind. This is his vibhuti, his glory. This is his yoga, his power. All right. Etam vibhutam yogam cha mama. This is my power, my glory. Now, how will we know Bhagavan? If Bhagavan is infinite, infinite means beyond our comprehension. So, how can we know? This verse now turns a little corner. The rest of this verse and the next few verses is talking about how we can know Bhagavan as a source of all. Not just as some abstraction, but to really know. And before we see the verse, go back to our drishtanta, our metaphor of the dream. If this is my dream, and you are a character in my dream, suppose as a character in my dream, you wonder, where did all this come from? And you, as a character in my dream, you want to know, who is the dreamer? Who I am? Of course, I'm upstairs in bed. Right now, you didn't know that. Right now, this is my dream. So right now, I'm upstairs in bed. What can you do to know me, the dreamer? Remember when we had this long discussion about transcendent and immanent? For those of you who are in those classes, the me, transcendent means beyond. Beyond imagination, beyond the mind. Immanent means here, now. And we use these words commonly, talking about Bhagavan, who is transcendent, beyond everything, and immanent, pervading the universe. Obviously, in this metaphor, if this is my dream, what is the transcendent aspect of me, the creator of this dream? The transcendent aspect of the dreamer is upstairs in bed. The immanent aspect of the dreamer is everything you experience. Because everything you experience is manasajata. It's all born of my mind, so to speak, in the dream metaphor. So about the me that's up in bed, you have no access. None. You are all characters in my dream. You will never know anything about me and my life. On the other hand, as my dream characters, you can sure know a lot about me the one because of whom all of this exists. Does that make sense, this metaphor? And that's what this verse then goes on to talk about. It says that there are some people, Yaha, who, Veti, who know Tattvataha, in reality. They know the reality, the Tattvam. They know the reality of what? Etam Vibhutam Yogam Cha. They know the reality of my glories. They know the reality of my power. So what about those people? Yo Veti, those who can know, what about them? Or how did they come to know? Saha, such a person, yo is singular. So a person who comes to know me, as I truly am, tatvam, tatvataha, and who knows my power and my glory, saha, that person, avikalpena yogena. Here again, yoga could mean power or effort. The words have so many meanings. If you look up a word in a Webster's dictionary, you'll find several meanings. You look up the word yoga in a good Sanskrit dictionary, I bet you'll find 10 or 20 meanings. Literally, 10 or 20 meanings, easily. So, let yoga here mean power or effort. Avikalpena yogena, someone who uses a yoga, a power or an effort, which is avikalpena, unwavering, with unwavering effort. Avikalpena yogena, that person, yujyate, can be joined, can reach me, Sri Krishna says, with unrestrained, unswerving effort. Such a person, yujyate, can become united with Bhagavan. Na atra samshayaha, atra, here, in this matter, na samshayaha, there is no doubt. There is no doubt that such a person can reach. You're thinking, what do you mean, no doubt? How can there be no doubt about reaching Bhagavan? That's what he says. Go back to our metaphor. This is my dream. You are my dream characters. What do you have to do to reach me? With regard to this dream world, I am Bhagavan. I am the creator, sustainer, destroyer. When I wake up, you're all gone, destroyed. So, you, as a character in my dream, what will it take for you to reach me? Where do you have to go to reach me? You get the point. I'm already here. I'm here in the form of everything you experience. I'm here in the form of this lecture hall. I'm here in the form of each and every person in this lecture hall. I'm here in all of these ways. What do you have to do to reach me? Nothing. What do you have to do to reach Bhagavan, God? Nothing. Bhagavan is here now. But in our meditation class, we talked about a veil that separates us from recognizing what's right in front of us. Imagine the one you want to see. In fact, in poetry, you'll see this kind of expression where one's beloved is hidden behind a veil. She's right there, but hidden behind the veil. All you have to do is remove this very thin veil, and your beloved is present. Bhagavan is here now, hidden in this case by a veil of ignorance. When that veil of ignorance is removed, the beloved Lord, in this case, is here. Therefore, na atra samshayaha. Therefore, there's no doubt about being able to reach Bhagavan and be joined to Bhagavan, yujyate, because Bhagavan is here now. This is pure Vedanta, isn't it? That which you seek, you already have. That which you want to achieve, you've already achieved. Already. Tattvamasi and all of the Mahavakyas, as we pointed out, in the present tense. Not that you will become that, you will reach that, you will be transformed. That's not what our scriptures say. Scriptures say you already are that. Bhagavan is already here, available to be recognized. That's the point.
Then,
continuing. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, aham sarvasya prabhavo, matta sarvam pravartate, matta sarvam pravartate, iti matva bhajante mam, iti matva bhajante, buddha bhava samanvitaha,
buddha bhava samanvitaha.
First line talks about, reiterates what we've been discussing here all class. Sri Krishna says here, aham, I am the sarvasya prabhavaha. Prabhava, source, origin. Aham prabhava, I am the source or origin, sarvasya, of everything. I am the source of everything, mattaha, from me, we saw the word before, mattaha, from me, sarvam pravartate, everything pravartate comes forth. From me everything comes forth. I am the source of everything. Reiterates what we've already discussed. What's new in this verse is answering another question. Previously we talked about how to know God. Now let's talk about how to worship God. How to know? We said recognize Bhagavan as the intelligence because of which every particle in the universe exists. To see Bhagavan's intelligence wherever we look. How will you worship that God? How to worship Bhagavan who pervades the universe? How to worship Bhagavan who's bigger than the universe? The universe exists in Bhagavan. How do you worship? When we do puja, we take a small lamp and we do arati. And if you're doing arati nicely, you wave the lamp around. And the idea is that the light should fall on every part of the vigraha, of the deity. Shouldn't just hold it in one place, but that light should illumine every part of the deity on the altar. Suppose you wanted to do puja, arati, to the god of the cosmos. That light from your dia, from your lamp, has to illumine every aspect of Bhagavan. How in the world will you do that? You can't. Which is why we chant. Natatra suryo bhati na chandra. During arati, we chant. Natatra suryo bhati. The sun is not bright enough to illumine you. Na chandra tarakam. The stars and moon are not bright enough to illumine you. Na ima vidyataha bhanti. The lightning in the sky is not intense enough to illuminate you. Vidyato bhanti. Na chandatakam. And if the sun and moon and stars and lightning can't illumine you, kutaha ayam agnihi. How can this little lamp illumine you? Tameva bhantam, you indeed shine. Tameva bhantam, tameva anubhantam, everything else shines because of you. Tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. It is because of your intelligent shining that this entire intelligent universe exists. What a spectacular mantra. Yajurveda mantra. That's recited often at in a traditional arati. The point is clear. How can you worship Bhagavan who exceeds everything, who exceeds our ability to envision? We can envision Bhagavan in some limited forms. We put those limited forms on an altar. We do puja. But what about Bhagavan in an unlimited form? How to worship Bhagavan? Well, suppose you're as, this sounds silly, and I apologize in advance, as my dream characters, you're supposed to worship me. That sounds really bad, really stupid. But then the metaphor, if you're my dream character, isn't if I'm the creator of all this, you're supposed to worship me. No. Of course, several things to keep in mind is I don't, will my feelings be hurt if you don't worship me? You're all my dream characters. I wake up and you're gone. I go to sleep, you come back. I'm bigger than that. It doesn't make any difference. So first of all, as your Vidhata, as your creator and master, you don't have to worship me. It's not for my sake. My feelings won't be hurt if you don't. This is why our prayer and worship of Bhagavan is not for Bhagavan's sake, it's for our sake. Clear. But more than that, what would be the best way to worship me, the creator of this dream universe? Any kind of arati or ritualistic worship is very limited. So you want a form of worship that goes beyond that. Well, how can you go beyond? Our minds are pretty powerful. We said before. Your mind is so powerful. You talked about human minds, even though human mind is a fraction of the universal mind. That human mind is so powerful, all of science and technology, or an example I remember my guru giving, is your mind is so powerful, it can go 8,000 miles in an instant. How does it go 8,000 miles in an instant? If you're sitting here and you daydream about someone in India, in an instant, your mind has gone 8,000-9,000 miles. This is a power of a mind. Your mind, an arati light, can't illumine much of Bhagavan, little bit at best. Your mind can illumine so much more. And that's what it says. How to worship that Bhagavan. Iti matva. These people, iti matva, thus thinking. Thinking. By thinking. By thinking what? First line. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha. I am the source of all. Mataha sarvam pravartate. Everything comes forth from me. Iti matva. Understanding this truth. Understanding that all that exists comes from Bhagavan. From his mind, so to speak. Iti matva. Understanding this bhajante mam. They worship me. This understanding is worship. So often in our heads, we separate worship and spiritual knowledge. We separate bhakti and jnana. But notice what Sri Krishna says in this verse. He says, jnanam is bhakti. Knowledge of God is worship of God. Why? How can you praise the God of the universe with an arati lamp? We can praise the God of the universe with our minds by knowing who that Bhagavan is. So iti matva, understanding Bhagavan as the source of all. Iti, thus bhajante mam, thus they worship me. Who worships me? Buddhaha, the wise ones. Those who have come to understand like this, buddhaha, wise ones who are bhava samanvita, who are full of devotion, who are full of understanding. So those who are full of understanding and devotion, they worship Bhagavan, not with a little arati lamp. They worship Bhagavan by knowing who and what that God of the cosmos is. Machitta madgata prana. Machitta madgata pra bodhayanta parasparam bodhayanta katayantaschamam nityam katayantaschamam tushyanti charamanti cha. Describing those wise ones, the ones who really know Bhagavan. And this is a particularly delightful verse describing the nature of such a person, the nature of an enlightened person, a person who is machittaha, all in plural, mantras in previous verse, and talking about all of them. Matchittaha, those whose chitta, whose mind, is always fixed on mat, me, Sri Krishna says. Those enlightened ones are matchittaha. They always have their minds fixed on me. They are madgata pranaha. Their prana, their lives, their life force, their energy, is madgata, literally gone into me, devoted to me, put it like that. They're devoted to me. Their minds are fixed on me. Their lives are devoted to me. And bodhayantaha parasparam. Bodhayantaha, literally, they are teaching. Bodhayantaha parasparam, each other. They're teaching each other, not in a formal sense, but when you, whatever you understand becomes your worldview. Each of us has a worldview. Worldview here means how you understand the world, how you understand your place in the world. Let's talk about this just for a moment. This is a little important. You probably know someone who's got a really pessimistic worldview. Someone who thinks that, oh, God, what a miserable life. It's just suffering after suffering, dukkha after, you know, suffering and suffering. And after decades of suffering, then you die. This is a pessimistic worldview. When you talk to that person, does that pessimistic worldview have any effect on you? Could. Certainly could. There are other people who have, what's another funny example of a worldview? Someone who's paranoid. They're out to get me. See that guy driving over there? Look how he's driving. He's after me. It's unlikely, I suppose. But people can have peculiar worldviews. And those worldviews, when you deal with such a person, it affects you. Someone who has a very optimistic worldview can encourage you. Someone who's got a particularly pious or religious worldview, maybe a pious parent or grandparent or relative, has a very profound effect on us. Here we're talking about enlightened ones, filled with wisdom. They have a worldview. Their worldview is matchittaha. Their minds are fixed on Bhagavan. Madgata prana. Their lives are devoted to Bhagavan. And someone with such a worldview, whoever they contact, it rubs off. Parasparam bodhayantaha. So parasparam, mutually, in any interaction, bodhayantaha, literally they are teaching. But here the implication is that their worldview is influencing all that they come in contact with. And katayantaha cha mam. And they go on katayantaha, they go on talking about mam, me, Lord. They go on talking about me when? Only on Saturday mornings? Nityam, always. They are continually talking about Bhagavan. Now, don't think that this is a person, you might know like a religious fanatic, that's the only thing they can think or talk about. We are not describing a religious fanatic here. Someone who recognizes that all of this is Bhagavan. If I'm talking about this, I'm talking about Bhagavan. If that's your worldview, that... Let's be more specific. Suppose you are sufficiently enlightened, so to speak, that you recognize every single human being as a manifestation of God, which is exactly what we've been discussing. But suppose this isn't just an abstract idea or concept. This is your worldview, which means when you meet someone, even a perfect stranger, you will see that this person is a manifestation of Bhagavan. When you are talking to this person, You are talking to Bhagavan. When you are thinking about this person, you are thinking about Bhagavan. When you are helping this person, you are helping Bhagavan. That's what it means. Katayanta cha mam nityam. Always talking to me, always talking about me, when your worldview is that everyone and everything is a manifestation of God. This is this would be your nature. Katayanta cha mam nityam. Always talking about Bhagavan. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Such people, tushyanti, are content. And not just content, ramanti. They revel. Such people are content and they revel in this vision of Bhagavan, in this particular worldview. All of this is Bhagavan. All of this is sacred. All right, a little more.
Hesham satata yuktanam, hesham satata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, bhajatam tadami buddhi yogam tam, tadami buddhi yogam, yena mam upayanti te, yena mam upayanti
te. You might be thinking that it's easy for someone filled with spiritual wisdom, it's easy for them to have this worldview where they see all people as forms of God, where they see the entire universe as divine and sacred manifestation of God. Maybe some of you think, well, but that's not me. I'll never get there. How can I achieve that? It's a natural question. We all feel or have felt that. I certainly did. I looked at my guru and said, how can I ever understand what he understands? How can I ever reach to the perspective that he's achieved? Naturally, when we see a great Mahatma, a spiritually enlightened person, a wise person, will have that feeling. But the fact remains that that wise person is still a person, human being, with a limited body like yours and mine, with a limited mind with yours and mine, like yours and mine, and with a bunch of problems like each and every one of us have. You think Mahatmas, you know, great enlightened saints, are somehow a different species or a different, different species. They're not Homo sapiens, so some other species. Silly. They are human beings. Then, how could they achieve? Now you see. They can achieve. How did they achieve? The same way they achieved, you and I can achieve. But let's see how Sri Krishna describes it in his verse. He says, Tesham, for those who are satata yuktanam, for those who are always striving, satata yuktanam, who are always striving, and who are bhajatam, worshipping God, priti purvakam, with love in their hearts, filled with love, filled with devotion, filled with bhakti. They are satata yuktanam, always striving, always making that effort to reach Bhagavan, to understand bhajatam, worshipping. Prior verse we saw, worship doesn't mean in a very limited sense puja. Worship here really means striving to know who and what is Bhagavan. To know Bhagavan is as God truly is here now. So, is it possible, with constant effort and constant devotion, is it possible to reach? After all, our minds are very finite. Our effort will always be finite. And we've had this discussion long, long ago. And it was a particularly challenging point. It was, with our limited power, How will we reach the infinite? Where do you go with that? The logic, by the way, is impeccable. The limited can never reach the limitless. You and I are limited. We can never reach the limitless. Period. Full stop. There's no exception to this rule. So at this point, either we can give up and go home, or consider there must be another way of solving this problem. You know, the expression, we have to get out of the box and think about it in a different way. Well, we admit the limited cannot become the limitless. The limited cannot reach the limitless. Can you make a connection, though, with an earlier discussion? That which we're seeking is already here. Bhagavan is already here. Now, nothing needs to be reached. Bhagavan's already here. We've said that veil of ignorance clouds our vision, clouds our understanding. You remove the veil of ignorance and you discover that you have what you've always been seeking. You know, this is just fun to remember my guru. Those of you who know Pujya Swami Dayananda, you probably have seen him like this. And he loves this as an example. Because he says, where are my glasses? You've done this too. Yeah, where did I put my glasses? Now this is interesting because you're seeking what you already have. And that's a brilliant metaphor for the whole of spiritual life. We are seeking what we already have. Therefore, there's no logical problem here. How can the limited reach the limitless? You don't have to. You've already reached. Bhagavan has never been separate from you. You've never been separate from Bhagavan. It's a matter of recognition, of discovery of an already existent fact. What will it take to discover an already existent fact? We'll conclude on this point. It's an important point. Listen carefully. The God you seek is already here now. You can't find Bhagavan. You know, I made this joke before. As a young man, I thought I had to go to India to find God, and I did. And what I eventually discover is God is no more in India than he is in this country or any country in the world. The seeking is misdirected. It's a matter of recognizing what is already here now. What is required for that recognition is buddhi, intelligence, knowledge, correct thinking. And where does that intelligence, knowledge, and correct thinking come from? The dhammi, buddhi yogam tam. To those people, first line, those people who are always striving for me, who worship me with their hearts filled with devotion, tam, to such a person, I give the dhammi, I give. To such a person, the dhammi, I give buddhi yogam. I give this buddhi yoga, again, take yoga here as power. I give this power of intelligence, this power of understanding. The dhammi, I give, which means your intelligence and mine come from where? Right. You know, if you did particularly well in your college days, it was only because Bhagavan blessed you with a really powerful mind. And here Bhagavan says, Dadami, I give to them, buddhi yogam, I give to them that power of mind, yena, with which mam upayanti te, with which te, they, mam, me, anuyanti, can reach up to. I give them, I'll paraphrase the last line, I give them the intelligence, the insight, the wisdom, so that they can reach me. Go back to the dream metaphor. If you are my dream characters, for a whole hour, I've been telling you, Who am I, the dreamer? So where did your, if you are now an enlightened dream character, at least you're enlightened until I wake up. So you are an enlightened dream character. How did you get enlightened? I gave it to you. So the intelligence with which we reach Bhagavan, that intelligence itself is given by Bhagavan. God has given us all that we need to recognize the truth of Bhagavan. All right. This is a good place to wrap up for today. We just have another verse to go, and then we get to Arjuna's question, which will open up the next portion of the chapter. Very good. We have a couple of important announcements, and then we'll conclude with Arati.